We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
They call you the Grill Master. You've seared the thickest porterhouse in the butcher shop. And as you lift that first forkful to your mouth, you savor the moment. To get amazing offers during the Mercedes-Benz summer event, like the 2019 C-Class sedan and GLC SUV, the perfect recipes of driving performance. Plus, you can enjoy 6 months of Sirius XM All Access included. The Mercedes-Benz summer event, now serving limited time offers on a select lineup of vehicles. Offers end September 3rd. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of the Fantasy Football Report. We are talking about our FFPC playoff challenge lineups. We entered a few of them. Just kind of a recap on what is going on. I, of course, am Blair Andrews. You can find me on Twitter at AmITheRealBlair. My co-host, as always, is Hassan Rahim. You can find at HRR5010. Hassan, what's up?
What's going on, Blair? Just enjoying the cold. It is, when I last checked, I believe it was negative 12 out. So, you know, having a great time doing that. But I'm pretty stoked to talk with our guest about some of our FFPC playoff challenge. I think this entire tournament has been supremely fun to follow, and it's coming down to a pretty close finish here.
Absolutely, yeah. We have a really special guest on today. It's Peter Overzet, who we entered at least two lineups into this challenge with. Pete, how's it going?
It's going well, guys. Excited to be back. Although it just dawned on me that, you know, we did all of this with Pat Corain, and then, you know, a bunch of our teams are not doing so hot, and then he just conveniently fled the country and didn't want to face the music about these playoff teams, and he was the one goading us into adding more, and then he leaves. So I just want to call Pat out for being a coward and fleeing the country.
That's right. It was probably his lineups that aren't doing so well, right?
Yeah, it's all his fault. But you guys were alerting me to the fact that one of our lineups, our collective ones, is on pace to cash here.
Yeah, so this one's actually kind of interesting. I'm just trying to pull it up here. It is on pace. Oh, man, my computer seems to have frozen here. But there we go. It is currently 338th. It's a titled RB Radio 1. We're at 268.65 points. And this one actually kind of an interesting one. This is one of the ones that we threw in last second. And this is just crazy. So it's Andrew Luck was our quarterback. Damian Williams and Chris Carson were and Alvin Kamara and Todd Gurley were our four running backs that we went with. We had Keaton Allen and Julian Edelman. And our tight end was Zach Ertz, the guy who we had a pretty heated debate about. And then we had Justin Tucker in the Chicago team defense. I think this was one of the only ones we didn't have Tariq Cohen. And, well, you know, Tariq Cohen and Chris Carson, what's the difference? But Damian Williams single-handedly dragged us into a pretty decent cash territory. So that's actually pretty nice to see. And it looks like we're set to cash. The two chalkiest players in the entire tournament are on this roster in Julian Edelman and CJ Anderson's backup, Todd Gurley. So what do you guys think is going to be like, you know, like we like there's a bunch of rosters with these two players on them. And I think that provided, you know, these two guys, you know, return even average results, the 2x multiplier should pretty much wipe out anyone that has a fairly contrarian roster, right? So what's our hope here for this roster?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of the big things we would need to fade. I mean, even the quarterbacks aren't a huge issue. Brady was only 8.5% owned, and then Goff was down at 3.2%. I would assume like we would need to avoid a big James White and big Robert Woods games would be the two. I mean, Sony Michel was only at 1.8%, so I don't even see that burning us. But James White at 16.49 and then Robert Woods at as well at 14.89. I think those would be the two guys, if they had monster games, could potentially push us out of the money.
Yeah, one guy that we ended up rostering on a lot of our other lineups was Rob Gronkowski. He came in at pretty low ownership. I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head.
Looks like 11.6.
11.6. Okay, so if he has a monster game, probably doesn't kill us, 11.6%. But yeah, I guess it's a good position to be in, to be already kind of in the money and have the two chalkiest guys still to play. You know, we spent a lot of the last time we spoke talking about ownership and kind of trying to find these leverage plays. You know, do we feel good having the chalkiest guys? I mean, is it smart to go more chalk? Is that kind of what we're deciding, or did we make the right call on, well, I don't even know how to ask this question. Did we make the wrong call by going too off the board, I guess, on a lot of our other lineups?
Well, I mean, it's tough, right? Because like Hassan said, it was Damian Williams who kind of dragged us to this spot. And, you know, Damian Williams was 5.3%. You know, everyone was going Mahomes, Kelsey, and even some Tyreek. So I think our logic going in was that we didn't have to make huge pivots or a bunch of pivots, just one or two critical ones. And the Damian Williams one, you know, worked out in a great way. And now this lineup is kind of positioned how we would have thought. So I, in a lot of ways, I think that the thought process behind these lineups were pretty smart. And yeah, it stinks that there's no way we're going to win this tournament with those two highly owned guys. But the fact that it'll lock in a cash, I think making that one big pivot in a really big leverage spot has proved to be a sharp play.
Yeah, for what it's worth, most of the teams in the top 10, well, the guy currently in first place in the top 10 has a slim lead over the person in second place, a little under a point, probably 0.9 points, and he has Julian Edelman and Greg Zuerlein. And the guy behind him and a bunch of lineups behind him actually have the Gurley Edelman roster, and they're not too far behind. And so, like, with two skilled players getting that 2x ownership, I don't know how good this guy feels sweating Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah. One thing I was thinking about right now, and let me know if this just seems like anecdotal or if this would actually be actionable, but like some of these lineups near the top, they have guys like Allen Robinson, and I even saw, I want to say I saw one lineup somewhere that had Kiki Kuti, and that bucket I would call the team that you maybe thought was going to lose. I guess the Bears weren't going to lose, but like leveraging, making your pivots on those teams that you didn't think were going to actually even have a chance to make the Super Bowl, because it was really if you got that monster game from Kuti or Allen Robinson, you were so far ahead of everyone else that I wonder if that's kind of a takeaway of making those big pivots in spots that won't kill you if the team doesn't go far.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can't imagine a lot of people were rostering Allen Robinson thinking he would be out, but yeah, someone like, well, like Kuti is a good example of that. If you thought the Texans would lose, which I think a lot of people did, or maybe someone like Alshon Jeffrey, although he didn't exactly have a huge game, but that's an interesting thought. In a way, it's kind of what worked out with our lineup that's cashing with Damian Williams. You know, we decided to go with him kind of, I guess, on this lineup. We were betting that the Chiefs would not make the Super Bowl. So, in a way, that kind of worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't want to be going into the Super Bowl, I think, with, like, Josh Reynolds and Burkhead or something.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I'm looking at some of these. I know one of the plays that I will take a little bit of a victory lap on is I was pushing heavily for fading Gurley and trying to play Robert Woods everywhere. And it's not necessarily that Robert Woods has set the playoffs on fire, but just more so, as Hassan referenced, that Gurley has been an afterthought. And my logic for it was that there was uncertainty with his health. I really never envisioned him getting fully benched while being healthy, but I think it just speaks to, you know, finding those, you know, he was 65% owned and there were legitimate reasons to fade him. I think those were some good spots to look for to get off those guys. So I do have a tinge of regret that we don't have Woods going into this playoffs, because I think we'd have some more leverage into this final game.
Yeah, and a little bit more so than just, I mean, Gurley. I mean, like, Cooks was a pretty good pivot, like, even going with, I guess, Cooks was probably the pivot, and if you really had the guts, maybe C.J. Anderson. Just to bring this back, one of our rosters is, and we thought this was a pretty sharp contrarian roster at the time, it's only 12 spots away from dead last, and that includes three people who didn't submit a roster, and one player who submitted a partial roster. All right.
What was this team?
So this team is Patrick Mahomes, Alvin Kamara, Chris Carson, DeAndre Hopkins, Robert Woods, Tariq Cohen, Mike Williams, Rob Gronkowski, Adam Vinatieri, and the Dallas team defense.
Oh,
so it's not half bad.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a crazy lineup, but.
Right. But, like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins didn't do much in his first game, and then it turns out he has this severe joint sprain. Chris Carson didn't do anything in the Seattle Dallas game. And the guy who we selected to be overweight on, and, you know, realistically, given his actual ownership and the fact that we lapped the field, I think it's still a very sharp play, was Tariq Cohen. It just so happens that Matt Nagy didn't agree that Tariq Cohen is good at football. And
yeah.
I think Taylor Gabriel saw just a ton of work that game, and he did nothing with it. And still, Cohen couldn't get on the field. And I think that's one of those plays that isn't too off the board. It's a decent, like, Pete, what was Cohen's ownership?
Cohen came in at 23.46, just ahead of Chris Carson and just below Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, and so, like, again, if we had to do it again, you know, knowing what we knew then, you know, the fact that he was 23-ish percent owned is pretty good, considering he really has, like, the kind of upside that's like a Tyreek Hill-esque that, you know, breaks the weekend, especially if you play DFS. He's a slate breaker. You know, it doesn't help when he's just not seeing any kind of work. And I think that's what sunk most of our lineups.
Yeah. And do you know, actually, my biggest regret, and not saying that I was, like, vouching for him, but that should have been more telegraphed, is Sony Michel, 1.8.
Yes.
And, you know, everything the Patriots were doing the second half of the season just told us they wanted to run the ball. And I think we probably allowed the group think of, like, oh, the Pats are done. They're going to get upset in the second round by whoever they play. And then on top of that, you know, Sony Michel doesn't catch passes. This is a full point PPR league. I think we should have had a sprinkle of Sony Michel in one of those lineups. And I believe we didn't have him anywhere, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that, because, like, he's someone who, when I'm putting together DFS lineups for the playoffs, he's like an obvious choice because it's just so clear that the Patriots, you know, when they're facing these teams that have explosive offenses, they want to kind of do what they can to keep the ball out of the opposing quarterback's hands. So they're just going to try to lean on Michelle. But yeah, it's unfortunate we didn't really see that before this contest started.
Yeah, I know that one just was frustrating. And what was crazy too of looking at, you know, the Pats is, you know, it was pretty heavily concentrated as far as ownership on Edelman. He was 45%. And then it came James White at 16, Gronk at 11. And I know Hassan was pushing for the Gronk play, and I liked it as a game theory play, but it was, now when you just look at it, it just becomes so clear that Michelle was the high leverage contrarian play that you should have been going with.
Yeah, I mean, our thought process on a lot of these running backs is that all of these games are going to be close. We want the running back who's going to be catching passes in the case of a loss or a game that's close. And Michelle doesn't fit that profile, but, you know, kind of you got to throw out the rule book with the Patriots, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the logic is, you know, how when you go into draft season and there's kind of now this old rule of thumb that you just draft the cheapest Patriots running back. Maybe with the FFPC playoff contest, is you draft, you know, the lowest owned Patriot that you can project for a bunch of touches, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
I will say that I think from a game theory perspective at the tight end slot, Gronk was incredibly underowned relative to Ertz and Ebron, who didn't profile to be members of teams that really had a true shot, in my opinion. Like, even knowing what we know now, right? Like our decision to almost wholesale fade Ertz outside of the one lineup was kind of semi-rewarded in that he really didn't do much, even given the 1.5 tight end premium. Not like Gronk has lit the world on fire, but, you know, and our rosters with Gronk are too far out of the money for us to really start hoping he starts dropping something big. But I think the way we approached and attacked the tight end slot, i.e. we just, did we have any Kelce lineups, or were we supremely underweight, or?
It's hard. I don't think we ever did. We ever even calculate our total ownership across these? Or I believe it was just like frantically firing these in at the last minute no follow up accounting.
We had a good Amari roster, I think, that like that unfortunately didn't go as well as we hoped.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of this too. I mean, you know, the hindsight's 2020, and there were a couple plays that we took stands on, you know, say the Tariq Cohen and even the Chris Carson play, where those games are legit coin flips, like with a minute left or seconds left in the case of the Bears game. And it, like you said, if Nagy, you know, pulls his head out of his ass, uses Cohen a little more, and then they advance. I mean, some of those plays in these rosters are probably sitting so much differently, literally based on just, you know, a few inches on a kick. So I guess it's hard to beat ourselves up too much, but I do think this is an informative exercise for next year.
Now, on at least the lineups Hassan and I entered, we had Cohen on, I want to say, 4 out of 5 of them. Is getting one player on that many lineups something that you think would be wise to do again, or is that something to avoid?
No, I like that. And I mean, it's the same thing with DFS, right? Like, you can't cover the entire board. And if you try to do that, if you are right on one situation, like, your returns aren't going to reflect the skill that it took to arrive at that pick. So I'm always on board with taking a few stands on players and shoving in. And then, you know, if the Bears somehow, you know, win 3 games, all of a sudden you have a low-owned dynamic player that's propelling, you know, instead of one of these lineups to cash, it's propelling 4 or 5 of them. So I'm always of that mind that I like taking stands, and I can live and die with the fact that it flamed out.
Yeah, I agree. Exactly.
The guy we should have probably faded a little bit more was Alvin Kamara. I think, if only because his ownership was fairly high, even relative to where Pat had him projected. And he had him very, like, he was, like, off within, what, like, 2 percentage points or something. But I think getting more Michael Thomas in there would have, like, maybe a 50-50 split, just to where we were naturally even weight on the field on Alvin Kamara.
Yeah, Kamara 53.66, Michael Thomas at 29.07.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, too, because I remember when we did our roundtable pod, that was one of the first examples I remember talking about. Is like, we don't have to do, you know, I know I mentioned Kiki Kuti, but you don't have to do Kiki Kuti. You can just not play Kamara and play Michael Thomas. It's like they're both mega studs in a great offense. And if everyone's gravitating to one more than the other, and we know it's a 50-50 chance of who's going to be outproduce the other, just take the lower owned guy every time.
Yeah, and even Hill's ownership was one that came in bonkers low, I think.
Yeah, although that one was explainable, right? Because it was Mahomes was just such a hammer play, and Kelce in this format too was such a kind of a moz to the light with like, oh man, I can lock in a tight end on the best team and a 1.5 point. So that Hill is a little more explainable to me, but I do agree we should have had more Michael Thomas.
All right. Anything else you would do differently next year after kind of seeing how these teams fared?
I mean, I guess one thing, and I don't know exactly the way to go about it. I mean, I've referenced the fact that we got excited toward the end and started kind of firing lineups in. I would maybe want to like pull back and think more about exposures from like a top-down level and then build lineups from there and think more about correlations and kind of playoff stories that we want to tell ourselves and then make sure that our exposures were kind of set as opposed to doing it more willy-nilly and be like, oh, we don't have this guy yet, let's throw him in here. I think there could have been maybe a little more thought we put into, okay, where do we put Amari in one of these to be more contrarian. I guess that's what I'd want to do differently.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know at the maybe the night before the contest started, Hassan and I were on the phone kind of tinkering with lineups we had made hours ago until, I don't know, like 2 a.m. So you kind of have these really good plans and then, you know, you keep thinking of new things. And by the end, you your lineups look nothing like the kind of theory behind them. So, yeah, I think being a little more intentional about the lineups we're entering and kind of taking a top-down approach, like you said, that makes sense.
For what it's worth, our Amari lineup was actually pretty good, I thought. It was Mitchell Trubisky, Todd Gurley, Melvin Gordon, DeAndre Hopkins, DeAndre Hopkins, T.Y. Hilton, Michael Thomas, Amari Cooper, Travis Kelce, Justin Tucker, and the New England team defense. So this was a bit of a New England fade almost, right? When you're taking the defense, a semi-fade. I think there were, like, you know, the way we kind of set this up, it looked pretty solid. We got a pretty decent head start. Like, we were expecting a shootout in that Houston Indy game. And then we were kind of expecting Chicago to beat Eagles, given our Eagles fade. It's a bit of a bummer. Melvin Gordon didn't really pan out the way he could have or should have. And, you know, Michael Thomas and Amari were both pretty good. And Travis Kelce also kind of had a bit of a quiet-ish almost playoff relative to where we expected him to be. This is a lineup that just sort of got – that came undone by a handful of, like, bad chalky plays that just, like, were, in the end, bad chalk. Blair and I do have one roster that's about 10 points-ish away from the cash line, and we've got a little bit of leverage on the field with James White in there. So yeah. It's James White and Gurley. So, you know, this might not – I doubt this lineup actually cannibalizes the other one. We're probably – too far away for this to actually do much damage unless James White has an absolute ridiculous game. The issue with James White doing that is, like you mentioned, Sony Michel and now Rex Burkhead is doing things. And so I think that that's one where I'd much rather hope, and I'm more so in line for the for our core joint team, the one that's currently sitting in 338th place, that's the one that like goes far. Would you ever have considered Rex Burkhead seriously, or would you have just sort of taken him more so as a guy who will is a reason for us to be more so on Michel, I guess, in hindsight?
Yeah, I mean, I would say playing Rex outright in this kind of contest is definitely probably getting way too cute. Just when there are – when you can leverage, you know, ownership with guys that you can actually project for a bunch of touches like James White or Michel and even Gronk, I just think it's too cute. But, it was probably contributed to why you get off of Sony Michel, because you're building this case of, like, no catching. You know, he has Rex Burkhead stealing high-leverage catches, you know. But I think when we look back on it and you see the way the Patriots were trending and what they wanted to do with this offense, I think it obviously makes a little more sense. But yeah, Burkhead's an issue, and you know, we know the Patriots, right? Like, would it shock anyone if Burkhead out-touched Sony Michel in the Super Bowl? I mean, people would probably say it would shock them. It wouldn't shock me though.
No, it wouldn't shock me. And I think that he's like considering a little bit off topic, but for DFS and considering its showdown, you're going to have to get a little crazy.
Well, and you saw it at the end of that Chiefs game, right? Where, you know, he had the play where he got stuffed on that 4th-and-1. That was obviously a huge carry they entrusted him with. He had that game-winning touchdown as well. And, I mean, the only reason they do this, right, is because Rex Burkhead doesn't tip off if they want to pass or run. When Sony Michel and James White are in, it's pretty clear as obvious, short of a play action, you know, what kind of play they're going to do. So Burkhead, you know, for a lack of a better term, opens up the playbook for them. And where better to unleash those new wrinkles and disguise your plays than in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, so let's talk about the Super Bowl. Are you feeling good about our Todd Gurley, about having Todd Gurley in all these lineups that are close to cashing? Do we think that the Super Bowl is where, you know, McVay finally puts him in the game and lets him kind of do his thing? Is he finally 100%, or is it still going to be the CJ Anderson show?
I mean, to answer your first question, do I feel good about it? No. Can I tell myself a story of how it could go well for us? You know, definitely. I think the hardest thing, I'm not buying the, you know, he's hurt thing. Like, I'm just not buying it. He hasn't been on the injury report for weeks. I think that he's made some mistakes. Maybe he's, you know, in practice, he hasn't looked good, and they've just liked what they've seen from CJ Anderson. And, you know, our pal Frisco Josh had a nice article out today in 538 about how McVay has done such a good job of allowing the team to rush against, you know, boxes that aren't stacked. And, you know, if he thinks he can get similar production from either one, and CJ's making, you know, less mistakes, then, you know, I think we're in line for, you know, another game where CJ Anderson gets, you know, at least half the work, if not more. So I think for that team and our Gurley rooting interest, I think we want the Patriots to get up early, so they're forced to use Gurley in pass catching situations, because we know they're not going to use CJ heavily there. So I think the worst thing that could happen for us would be a close game with the Patriots winning, because that's less Edelman, less passing, and then more CJ Anderson. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I know the narrative kind of out of, or at least what the Rams are saying, is that Gurley's going to be good to go. But, you know, yeah, it's very weird to see CJ Anderson have such a big role, even when Gurley is apparently not injured. You know, he did have, I think, a pretty big drop in that game, although I don't know if, like, he was benched because of it. But it's, yeah, maybe there is something going on about how he's looked in practice or how he's been performing.
He's shook, man. He's shook. CJ Anderson, by his own admission, is playing overweight right now. Like it's actually almost kind of funny, because like Anderson's taking shots at himself and his own weight. And this is a dude who failed to get on the Chiefs. He was cut by the Panthers. He was cut by the Raiders, and now he's just waltzed into LA, and he's just out here taking, you know, just like eating into Gurley's production. I think the people who are like supremely shook should be like Gurley dynasty owners. Like, because I saw a bunch of like tweets, you know, that were like obviously in jest. I was like, oh, just go buy low on Todd Gurley right now, which is like, all right, the only way you're getting Gurley is if you're going to move Saquon Barkley, and congrats, you just lost that trade. But, you know, I just think that there's, like you said, Peter, I just don't think that this is like one of those, like, I think Gurley is healthy. And I think we do need him to be a pass catching threat. My biggest issue with like the Rams getting, I mean, down big is a complete erasure of Gurley from the run game. I mean, Gurley was erased against the Saints the first game they played too. But the dude who feasts in that situation is Brandon Cooks. Do you have Cooks' ownership by any chance?
Yeah, let's see here. He was relatively owned. He came in at, 5%. I mean, Tyler Lockett was higher owned than Brandon Cooks.
Wow, my God. Yeah. All right. That's like getting kind of cute, right? Like, that's where, like, you get the ownership draws away a dude who like, will smash in these kind of scripts.
Yeah. I know. He's definitely would be the great leverage play to have in this game. Sony Michel and a Brandon Cooks combo, you could probably be sitting in 1,000th place. And if those two blew up, you could probably climb 900 spots.
Yeah, and that's sort of where I think like those guys are probably that's the kind of game strip they're hoping for. And Cooks typically does pretty well on in domes in general. And like, you know, again, we know Atlanta is a bit of a fast track, maybe not as fast as New Orleans, but these are two games that, I mean, like two stadiums where we know he typically smashes just because of the conditions. And I think that that's one of those factors we probably overlooked in our enthusiasm for Gurley and Robert Woods.
Yeah.
And a revenge game.
I know. I mean, at this rate, he has to get traded to the Chiefs next year, right? To kind of complete his tour of all the best teams in the NFL.
And probably the best quarterback he'd have played with in terms of deep passing. I mean, like Breeze like Breeze and Brady or something else, but like Mahomes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just reunite all that 2014 draft class on the Chiefs.
Speaking of the Patriots, do we think they're gonna, I mean, we mentioned they've been leaning on Sony Michel a lot. Is that probably the game plan going into this game too? I mean, it could end up that even though Gurley and Edelman are the two chalkiest guys in this game, that both of them are not even featured in the game at all, depending on how it shakes out.
Yeah, I almost feel like the Patriots offense, it's been pretty concentrated, right? I mean, as much as, you know, we complain about, you know, guys like Burkhead and stuff, it's mainly been like the pie has gotten so big because their games against the Chargers, that was a blowout and they were putting up so many points. And then the Chiefs game was this shootout. So I think of it, it's more or less like your typical Patriots tomfoolery and more so. Like, we know that the Patriots offense is going through Michelle, James White, and Edelman. Like, that, those guys have been pretty bankable week in and week out. So I guess the question is, you know, what does McVay do to stop these guys? You know, they have the better corners on the outside. I don't know if you guys think they're going to, you know, track Edelman around the field with one of those guys with, like, Tlaib. And, you know, ultimately, I think Michelle still might be set up for the most success. But I think it'll be fairly concentrated.
What's weird is that, like, you know, we in our mind's eye, we think of Michelle as a guy who simply doesn't catch the ball. And like even up to now, there hasn't been much evidence that he didn't. But it wasn't like that in college. It's not like he doesn't catch the ball. Like, and the fear that there is here for like a Michelle absolute smash game is that they do start using him heavily in like the passing game, especially if they get up big and they're just using him to keep the game in flow and in script.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do think it would be weird if they started using him in that manner, but you know, again, we talk about when are teams and these smart coaches going to pull the extra tricks out of their sleeve. I mean, if there was ever a time to all of a sudden install Sony Michel as the pass catcher when, you know, they go a jumbo formation and then, you know, move him out in the flat or something, and the Rams have never seen this look all season on any tape. I mean, I would buy that.
Yeah, I mean, like, White's got 23 targets and Edelman's got 23 targets. And, you know, and Gronk and Hogan are back with like 12 each, and Michelle's only got one. But, like, you know, this could be one of those ones where, like, Cordero Patterson rips off like a 90-yard touchdown or whatever, or like, you know, they use Dorsett a little bit as well. And it's a bit of a fear, because for having the two chalkiest guys and, like, you know, being semi-confident that we should get some kind of we should cash one lineup, like, there's a little bit of consternation just like in the way that, like, Belichick adapts his offense to, you know, just attack another opposing defense's weaknesses, which is, I mean, after all these years, all you've got, I mean, all, like, it has to be nothing more than, like, respect. Even if it's a begrudging respect, it's respect, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the more we talk about it, and, you know, we were talking about it a little bit ago, too, the more I'm kind of selling myself as Rex Burkhead being a big, big piece of their game plan, because I would be more inclined to think that they really expand Burkhead's role more so than changing Michelle's role. In the last game, I could just really see it be a game where, you know, Burkhead's on the field for, you know, 75% of the offensive snaps, and they just, you know, just roll with him if it's a tight game and they're not wanting to telegraph their play calls.
Out of curiosity, I mean, I know he's in a bunch of our dead lineups, but, you know, theoretically could be his retirement game, Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, I mean, all the kind of the tea leaves, and that seems, I mean, I don't know if there's a line on it somewhere, but it seems like you would get plus odds on him returning at this point, just from kind of like the media narrative, although I haven't heard him specifically, you know, hint at that at all, to make it concrete. So I don't know, but it definitely seems like Gronk's the kind of guy that would be willing to get another Super Bowl ring and then sail off into the sunset.
Do you think if maybe the Patriots are thinking he's going to retire, they would try a little harder to get him involved in this game, and he'd have one last 3-touchdown game before he calls it quits?
I mean, if there's one coach in all of sports who is hardly sentimental and could give a shit about things like that, it's probably Belichick. So I can't envision him forcing a target to anyone, even his pal Rob Gronkowski.
The weirdest thing, though, about, like, Gronk was, so in that Chiefs playoff game where he bobbled the ball and then it was picked off, and then, you know, the play was whistled dead because of the Dee Ford offside.
Yeah.
Like, even, you know, prior to that, like, Gronkowski actually had the most targets on any New England receiver. He had 11 targets. He caught 6 balls for 79 yards.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually almost freakishly scary. And I know, like, one of the areas where the Rams are going to, like, they're selectively weakish almost is the tight end, against tight ends. You can actually get away with Kelce carved them up in, like, you know, that regular season, the greatest game ever played. But, you know, I think Gronkowski, they're going to probably have to stick Tlaib on Gronkowski. There's no way they can have Tlaib splitting duty between Edelman and Gronk. They're giving up mega yards one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Hassan, I feel like Gronk's going to retire and you're going to be the guy going on podcasts being like, I think he's going to come back. I think he's got football in his DNA, man. He's going to come back and post 100 yards. You just can't quit him, Hassan. You can't.
At some point during this, like, regular season, something in my brain just broke where it came down to Gronk. After years of just not rostering an elite tight end, like, I think Gronk's the guy who's broken me. It's like,
that's right.
I have, like, one of the only conspiracy theories I truly believe is that, like, the entire party playboy Gronk in season is all an act, and that, like, he's, like, a crazy hard worker. Like, if you see him drinking vodka from a bottle, I think he's drinking water. Like, there's no way. He was so dominant for so long.
Hassan is a Gronk alcohol truther.
That's where I am in this.
Okay, well, I'll tell you where I'm at right now. I just bet Rex Burkhead at 66-1 to be the Super Bowl MVP.
That's a pretty good. That's tantalizing.
That's right.
Where'd you get that line?
Bovada.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard oddsmaker was caping for Robert Woods at 50-1 But then all this Rex Burkhead talk got me all hot and bothered under the collar. I had to go put some money down on it.
What's your James Devlin receiving prop, rushing and receiving prop?
Bovada isn't offering any James Devlin props because they hate fullbacks, apparently. But the one I've been seeing was that people have been betting the under on that's at a few spots is just James Devlin under 3.5 yards rushing.
Yeah, that's interesting that's such a pain.
Carry from the two.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, he'll convert that.
Yeah, I also did my alter ego, Pete Manzanelli, might have bet $6.90 on James Devlin at plus 40,000. So, you know, I think the path there is 3 goal line TDs, a couple huge pass blocks or in pass protection, and then maybe a fumble recovery during special teams. But yeah, if that happens, you know, you're sailing off into the sunset.
Oh, yeah.
The Rams do an onside kick and he takes it in for a touchdown.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you guys into any of the props? You getting it down on any of this action?
I was actually trying to, you know, looking over Court Smith's site, bettheprop.com at some of this stuff. I was planning on firing off a few, maybe, you know, over the next few days. I didn't know if the market had changed much. And I heard Oddsmaker mention that James Devlin prop. And I, you know, I heard him talk about like Robert Woods. My biggest issue with Woods is I think he's for what it's worth, I think the Patriots have a sneaky, strong secondary.
Yeah.
And I think if the Rams are really going to win this, it's going to be via Brandon Cooks on the fast track.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's see here. Brandon Cooks MVP odds, yeah, not near as good, which is surprising. Like, why, you know, Robert Woods has been, you know, the better receiver for most of the year, at least more productive. He's plus 5,000. Brandon Cooks plus 4,000. I'm curious why. Is that just a revenge narrative bump that the books are seeing there?
No, I think like Cooks has been the more productive guy in the postseason here. And I'm just trying to figure out I'm trying to see what the DraftKings prices are for these two guys. And even DraftKings has Cooks more expensive than Woods. And I, you know, it's not necessarily that maybe I'm really hoping it's the revenge game narrative bump, because that's, I'd love for life to mirror that. But I think it's just the fact that it's an indoor game. And if they're going to they're going to not slot receptions are not going to do it. Like, I think McVay is sharp enough to motion Woods outside a lot.
Yeah.
But I think you're going to need Cooks to truly, if they fall behind by 14 or so points, you're going to need Cooks to just go absolutely nuts. We've seen it with New England. I mean, they did not let the Chiefs touch the ball at all. Like, this, the way this team controls time, you know, like if you're the Rams, you have to know that the only way you're going to be able to make up a big deficit is in a very quick amount of time. Because if there's one thing that when we were watching that game against the Chiefs, for the entire first half was very, very boring, if only because the Patriots did not let them get any plays off.
Yeah, I do think there are a few paths where this game, I do kind of lean the under in this game. And I, like you mentioned, with both of these secondaries are pretty good. Both these teams want to run the ball. I think it could be a kind of a lower scoring. Both these teams are capable of playing both ways. But I think deep down, the way McVay kind of wanted to hide Goff toward the end of the season and, you know, establish CJ Anderson and Gurley and the Pats doing the similar thing with Michelle and Burkhead. I mean, couldn't you guys envision, you know, this game going 10, 15 points under the total and just seeing a ton of running?
Yeah, that wouldn't be too surprising.
Especially if it stays close, right? Especially if it remains within a touchdown.
Yeah, right. Yeah, if one team gets up big, then both of these teams aren't going to be idiotic and continue to run the ball. You'd think they'd start to air it out, but. But yeah, I think the most likely, or at least what these teams want to do in their ideal world, is run the ball. which is weird. You would, at the beginning of the season, who would have ever have looked at these teams, these quarterbacks, these passing weapons and say that, but that's really where they've trended this whole back half of the season.
Yeah, and I think part of that just sort of comes down to it speaks volumes to how dynamic their offenses are, right? Like, if you're either team and you want to run the ball, realistically what that means is you've got that lead and all you want to do is bleed time. And I think, you know, it's a very good, like, intuition, if only because these are two offenses capable of, like, turning it on whenever they feel like it. And I think that just sort of speaks to, like, the mutual-ish respect, i.e. we want to keep the ball away from you. You know, we saw it with New England and Kansas City. Like, they knew, I mean, they knew Mahomes could, like, light him up within, you know, in like, three pass attempts. It's just, you don't want them touching the ball. You want the biggest strength of your opposition, i.e. their offense, on the sidelines.
Yep. Yeah. The game's going to be fun. It'll be fun to watch, but it is, I do feel like we were robbed of, you know, some super fun football. I just, any combo that involved the Chiefs would have been so much more exciting, I think, just from a game entertainment standpoint. So I feel like I am still a little bitter about that.
For sure. Yeah. All right. Before we get out of here, let's get some predictions on the outcome and maybe give me one bold call.
Okay, I will say, I already mentioned, I like the under. I think these teams are going to run the ball more than maybe we would want. And all of the prevailing wisdom right now is this, it's the Patriots. You know, it's the same old story. You know, here they are again. You know, Goff and McVay don't have the experience. The Patriots are going to dispatch these guys. And the line has reflected that, you know, where it's now Patriots minus three, which everyone, it opened at minus, or I think it even opened Rams minus one in a lot of spots. I heard Sean Corner saying his projections still have the Rams at minus one. A lot of the sharp kind of numbers guys think the Rams should be slight favorites. So I'm going to fade the public and media narratives that it's the Patriots world and we just live in it. And I won't even take the Rams with the points. I'll take the Rams in an upset in a low scoring game.
Wow. That's actually a good one. I'm going to go with, I was going to say something about Gronk, but, but I really can't bring myself to do that. I will probably say I'm probably a donkey doing this and maybe just a huge fish. But I think, like, the Patriots, if you were able to jump on them at anything below three, probably you're sitting pretty. If not, you know, I would think that the Patriots actually win this outright. Like, we see bad Jared Goff. I do think the under hits, but probably the Patriots' team total goes over. And for all of Sean McVay saying that, you know, Todd Gurley will be a big part of this game, he won't. He'll spend a lot of time on the bench. Both him and Anderson will spend plenty of time on the bench as the Rams are forced into, you know, chasing from in a supreme-ish negative script, like 17-plus points. And Brandon Cooks would lead all Rams skill players in fantasy scoring for the weekend.
All right. I like it. What do you got, Blair?
What do I got? I got, I like the Rams also to win, but I'm going to say this game goes way over. It's a shootout.
Ooh,
Rams win.
Okay.
Rams win 40-38 or something. And Gerald Everett scores two touchdowns.
Ooh, now that's spicy.
I own him like on too many dynasty teams, obviously.
Yeah, that's right. And no dynasty points for the Super Bowl touchdowns, but maybe you're able to flip him in the offseason after that game.
There you go. All right. That'll do it for this special episode of the Fantasy Football Report. Special thanks to our guest, Peter Overzet. You can find him on Twitter at Peter Overzet. For Hassan Rahim, I'm Blair Andrews. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Football Report. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast channel on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter @rotovizradio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Ready, set, save, California. It's sell-a-thon time this Labor Day at your California Ford dealer. Get ready for the best offers of the summer on the 2019 Ford lineup, like an adventure-ready Explorer or the all-new built Ford Tough Ranger. Or get behind the wheel of the 2019 Ford F-150 with the power, toughness, and capability to carry any payload. You've waited all summer for these deals, and the wait is over. So ready, set, save. The Labor Day sell-a-thon is on now. But don't wait. These deals won't last. Hurry into your California Ford dealer before it all ends September 3rd.
Say Metro by T-Mobile. Got the best deal in wireless, and it's all for you, all for me. Just switch quickly, because Metro has two lines for $80 and two Samsung Galaxy J7 Star phones for free, plus Amazon Prime included. That's the way wireless should be, only at Metro.
Plus sales tax and activation fee. $50 plus rate plan required. Not valid for numbers currently on T-Mobile network or on Metro in past 90 days. Offer subject to change. Offer valid for new Amazon Prime members. Amazon Prime has a $12.99 per month value. Restrictions apply. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings. A four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.